"Well, Ted," said the weatherman, "I don't know about that, but it's not only the owls that have been acting oddly today. Viewers as far apart as Kent, Yorkshire and Dundee have been phoning in to tell me that instead of the rain I promised yesterday, they've had a downpour of shooting stars. Perhaps people have been celebrating bonfire night early. It's not until next week, folks, but I can promise a wet night tonight." Mr. Dursley sat frozen in his armchair. Shooting stars all over Britain? Owls flying by daylight? Mysterious people in cloaks all over the place? And a whisper about the Potters. Mrs. Dursley came into the living room, carrying two cups of tea. It was no good. He'd have to say something to her. He cleared his throat nervously.
Petunia, dear, you haven't heard from your sister lately, have you?"
As he had expected, Mrs. Dursley looked shocked and angry. After all, they normally pretended she didn't have a sister.
"No," she said sharply. "Why?"
"Funny stuff on the news," Mr. Dursley mumbled. "Owls, shooting stars. There were a lot of funny-looking people in town today."
"So?"
snapped Mrs. Dursley.
"Well, I just thought maybe it was something to do with, you know, her lot."
Mrs. Dursley sipped her tea through pursed lips. Mr. Dursley wondered whether he dared tell her he'd heard the name Potter. He decided he didn't dare.
Instead, he said, as casually as he could, "Their son, he'd be about Dudley's age now, wouldn't he?" "I suppose so," said Mrs. Dursley, stiffly. "What's his name again? Howard, isn't it?"
"Harry. Nasty, common name, if you ask me."
"Oh, yes," said Mr. Dursley, his heart sinking horribly. "Yes, I quite agree." He didn't say another word on the subject as they went upstairs to bed. While Mrs. Dursley was in the bathroom, Mr. Dursley crept to the bedroom window and peered down into the front garden. The cat was still there. It was staring down Privet Drive as though it was waiting for something. Was he imagining things? Could all this have anything to do with the Potters? If it did, if it got out that they were related to a pair of... Well, he didn't think he could bear it. The Dursleys got into bed. Mrs. Dursley fell asleep quickly, but Mr. Dursley lay awake, turning it all over in his mind. His last comforting thought before he fell asleep was that even if the Potters were involved, there was no reason for them to come near him and Mrs. Dursley. The Potters knew very well what he and Petunia thought about them and their kind. He couldn't see how he and Petunia could get mixed up in anything that might be going on. He yawned and turned over. It couldn't affect them. How very wrong he was. Mr. Dursley might have been drifting into an uneasy sleep, but the cat on the wall outside was showing no sign of sleepiness. It was sitting as still as a statue, its eyes fixed unblinkingly on the far corner of Privet Drive. It didn't so much as quiver when a car door slammed in the next street, nor when two owls swooped overhead. In fact, it was nearly midnight before the cat moved at all. A man appeared on the corner the cat had been watching, appeared so suddenly and silently, you'd have thought he'd just popped out of the ground. The cat's tail twitched, and its eyes narrowed. Nothing like this man had ever been seen in Privet Drive. He was tall, thin, and very old, judging by the silver of his hair and beard, which were both long enough to tuck into his belt. He was wearing long robes, a purple cloak which swept the ground, and high-heeled, buckled boots. His blue eyes were light, bright, and sparkling behind half-moon spectacles, and his nose was very long and crooked, as though it had been broken at least twice. This man's name was Albus Dumbledore. Albus Dumbledore didn't seem to realize that he had just arrived in a street where everything from his name to his boots was unwelcome. He was busy rummaging in his cloak, looking for something. But he did seem to realize he was being watched, because he looked up suddenly at the cat, which was still staring at him from the other end of the street. For some reason, the sight of the cat seemed to amuse him. He chuckled and muttered, "I should have known." He had found what he was looking for in his inside pocket. It seemed to be a silver cigarette lighter. He flicked it open, held it up in the air, and clicked it. The nearest street lamp went out with a little pop. He clicked it again. The next lamp flickered into darkness. 12 times he clicked the put-outer, until the only lights left in the whole street were 2 tiny pinpricks in the distance, which were the eyes of the cat watching him. If anyone looked out of their window now, even beady-eyed Mrs. Dursley, they wouldn't be able to see anything that was happening down on the pavement. Dumbledore slipped the put-outer back inside his cloak, and set off down the street towards number 4, where he sat down on the wall, next to the cat. He didn't look at it, but after a moment he spoke to it. "Fancy seeing you here, Professor McGonagall." He turned to smile at the tabby, but it had gone. Instead, he was smiling at a rather severe-looking woman who was wearing square glasses exactly the shape of the markings the cat had had around its eyes. She, too, was wearing a cloak, an emerald one. Her black hair was drawn into a tight bun. She looked distinctly ruffled. "How did you know it was me?" she asked. "My dear Professor, I've never seen a cat sit so stiffly." "You'd be stiff if you'd been sitting on a brick wall all day," said Professor McGonagall. "All day? When you could have been celebrating? Oh, I must have passed a dozen feasts and parties on my way here." Professor McGonagall sniffed angrily. "Oh, yes, everyone's celebrating, all right," she said impatiently. "You'd think they'd be a bit more careful. But no, even the Muggles have noticed something's going on. It was on their news." She jerked her head back at the Dursleys' dark living-room window. "I heard it. Flocks of owls, shooting stars. Well, they're not completely stupid. They were bound to notice something. Shooting stars down in Kent? I bet that was Daedalus Diggle. He never had much sense." "Oh, you can't blame them," said Dumbledore, gently. "We've had precious little to celebrate for 11 years." "I know that," said Professor McGonagall irritably. "But that's no reason to lose our heads. People are being downright careless, out on the streets in broad daylight, not even dressed in Muggle clothes, swapping rumours." She threw a sharp, sideways glance at Dumbledore here, as though hoping he was going to tell her something. But he didn't. So she went on. "A fine thing it would be if, on the very day you-know-who seems to have disappeared at last, the Muggles found out about us all." "I suppose, he really has gone, Dumbledore?"
"It certainly seems so," said Dumbledore. "We have much to be thankful for. Would you care for a sherbet lemon?"
"A what?"
"A sherbet lemon. They're a kind of Muggle sweet I'm rather fond of."
"No, thank you," said Professor McGonagall coldly, as though she didn't think this was the moment for sherbet lemons.
"As I say, even if you-know-who has gone, my dear Professor, surely a sensible person like yourself can call him by his name. All this you-know-who nonsense. For 11 years I've been trying to persuade people to call him by his proper name, Voldemort."
Professor McGonagall flinched, but Dumbledore, who was unsticking 2 sherbet lemons, seemed not to notice.
"It all gets so confusing if we keep saying, you know who. I've never seen any reason to be frightened of saying Voldemort's name."
"I know you haven't," said Professor McGonagall, sounding half-exasperated, half-admiring. "But you're different. Everyone knows you're the only one you know... Oh, all right, Voldemort... was frightened of."
"You flatter me," said Dumbledore calmly. "Voldemort had powers I will never have. Only because you're too, well,
noble to use them.
It's lucky it's dark. I haven't blushed so much since Madame Pumphrey told me she liked my new earmuffs.
Professor McGonagall shot a sharp look at Dumbledore and said, "The owls are nothing to the rumours that are flying around. You know what everyone's saying about why he's disappeared? About what finally stopped him?" It seemed that Professor McGonagall had reached the point she was most anxious to discuss, the real reason she had been waiting on a cold, hard wall all day. For neither as a cat nor as a woman had she fixed Dumbledore with such a piercing stare as she did now. It was plain that whatever everyone was saying, she was not going to believe it until Dumbledore told her it was true. Dumbledore, however, was choosing another sherbet lemon and did not answer.
"What they're saying," she pressed on, "is that last night Voldemort turned up in Godric's Hollow. He went to find the Potters. The rumour is that Lily and James Potter that they're dead."
Dumbledore bowed his head. Professor McGonagall gasped.
"Lily and James? I can't believe it. I didn't want to believe it. Oh, Albus."
Dumbledore reached out and patted her on the shoulder.
I know, he said heavily.
Professor McGonagall's voice trembled as she went on.
"That's not all. They're saying he tried to kill the Potter's son, Harry. But he couldn't. He couldn't kill that little boy. No one knows why or how, but they're saying that when he couldn't kill Harry Potter, Voldemort's power somehow broke, and that's why he's gone."
Dumbledore nodded glumly.
It's true, faltered Professor McGonagall. "After all he's done, all the people he's killed, he couldn't kill a little boy? Well, it's just astounding, of all the things to stop him. But how in the name of heaven did Harry survive?"
"We can only guess," said Dumbledore. "We may never know."
Professor McGonagall pulled out a lace handkerchief and dabbed at her eyes beneath her spectacles. Dumbledore gave a great sniff as he took a golden watch from his pocket and examined it. It was a very odd watch. It had 12 hands, but no numbers. Instead, little planets were moving around the edge. It must have made sense to Dumbledore, though, because he put it back in his pocket and said,
"Hagrid's late. I suppose it was he who told you I'd be here, by the way."
"Yes," said Professor McGonagall, "and I don't suppose you're going to tell me why you're here, of all places."
"I've come to bring Harry to his aunt and uncle. They're the only family he has left now."
"You don't mean... you can't mean the people who live here?" cried Professor McGonagall, jumping to her feet and pointing at Number 4. "Dumbledore, you can't! I have been watching them all day. You couldn't find two people who are less like us. And they've got this son. I saw him kicking his mother all the way up the street, screaming for sweets. Harry Potter, come and live here?"
"It's the best place for him," said Dumbledore firmly. "His aunt and uncle will be able to explain everything to him when he's older. I've written them a letter."
"A letter?" repeated Professor McGonagall faintly, sitting back down on the wall. "Really, Dumbledore, you think you can explain all this in a letter? These people will never understand him. He'll be famous. A legend. I wouldn't be surprised if today was known as Harry Potter Day in future. There will be books written about Harry. Every child in our world will know his name."
"Exactly," said Dumbledore, looking very seriously over the top of his half-moon glasses. "It will be enough to turn any boy's head. Famous before he can walk and talk. Famous for something he won't even remember. Can't you see how much better off he'll be, growing up away from all that, until he's ready to take it?"
Professor McGonagall opened her mouth, changed her mind, swallowed, and then said,
Yes, you're right, of course. But how is the boy getting here, Dumbledore?"
She eyed his cloak suddenly, as though she thought he might be hiding Harry underneath it.
Hagrid's bringing him. "'You think it wise to trust Hagrid with something as important as this?'
"'I would trust Hagrid with my life,' said Dumbledore.
"'I'm not saying his heart isn't in the right place,' said Professor McGonagall, grudgingly. "'But you can't pretend he's not careless. He does tend to—' "'What was that?'